This isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
I was at a panel with Jay Leno and Jeff Dunham last week, and then they referred to this sound as car porn music. Derogatory. I mean, this music was composed during the peak of car reality shows. 2015 was a different time, man. I'd be completely happy to have something new. If you have any ideas, call me, 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline, weekly show covering the greater automotive culture area. And this week, we visit with someone I'm very excited to meet. So I said I like cars that have a story. I try to limit my buying of cars to ones that have some type of lore to them. And Tim Fabrizio is arguably one of the greatest at uncovering stories when it comes to cars. He's made numerous appearances on VinWiki Car Stories. He's managed to uncover cars the whole world's been looking for, like the one-of-one Victoria's Secret Lamborghini Diablo. He's bought several Mercedes-Benz from the West German Tuning House, ABC exclusive. Takes on all kinds of clients looking to find their long-lost, cherished cars and has traveled the whole country doing so. He drives Nicki Minaj's Bentley Continental, and he even found a very special car I was looking for. So let's get into it. So what brought you out here to LA? Because I want to hear, because you've had some interesting takes on California, and I'm a native Chicagoan, so if it shit on California all you want.
Okay, so I like California. I mean, it's got good weather. It's obviously one of the hubs of America, you know, it's like one of the three main hubs. But, like I was saying before with my friend, you can't tell what area is good and what area is bad because there's always going to be, like, bars on the windows, yeah. But, like, a 488 in front of it.
Yeah.
So it's very weird in that sense. Like, you never know whether you're in
when
a good
place. When I moved
place.
Here, I thought everything was bad. Like, I was up on, like, Melrose right? by Pink's.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this looks like a sketchy neighborhood. Yeah. It's like Melrose and...
I know, yeah. So you get that. Like vibe off the place. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's just like I have TJ Lamb with me. I don't know if you know who that is. He's Magna Cars.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he's British. He lives in the, or lives in Canada. And so I've been trying this whole trip to convince him that America is not just one big sketchy place. And like, as we're having that conversation, we go to a Walgreens and she's like locking the door individually for each person. And she's like, what a rough day. We had a smash and grab. I'm like, TJ, what I said 10 minutes ago still stands. Like, we are not this sketchy outside of California.
Was that in the Bay Area or LA?
Bay Area.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, he can't comprehend that in New York, you don't have to worry about smash and grabs on the street. Like, nobody's breaking into your car. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure it happens, but like it's not like an epidemic like it is.
Yeah.
It's more NorCal that I kind of have a beef with than SoCal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's California.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's been your mission this whole trip?
So the reason I came out here is actually there's a, I don't know if the full car is a prototype or just the engine, but it's basically a prototype Countach that curated in Miami has been looking for many, many, well, not just curated. Everyone's been looking for this car since 1989. It kind of just disappeared after its original owner, who was the actual importer for Lamborghinis, or the distributor, I should say. And he, once the car disappeared in 89, I mean, nobody's heard of it, but a couple months back, actually at, I think it was Amelia Island, I got a phone call and I'd like run away from all the cars revving. And it was the owner of the Countach. And he called me back out of like everyone since 1989. And I basically, you know, I beat around the bush a little bit, but then I was like, would you sell it? April 11th, 11 a.m., come to my house. So that's why I'm here. I came a few days early to make sure that I wouldn't have any issues down here. But I started up in, it's been years since I went to California.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a whole laundry list of things to hit up here, like cars, fines, jobs for, you know, clients and whatnot. So I started in NorCal and I'm working my way south now.
And you drove here?
To LA?
Well, from NorCal.
Yes, from NorCal we did. I started in San Francisco, went to Sacramento, back to San Francisco, San Jose, Monterey. Now we're down here. May do San Diego, may go to Arizona, and then Texas.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you're driving all that?
If I buy a car tonight, yes. Okay. I don't feel like paying the rental, so yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Cool. So I want to backtrack a bit. Okay. I'm going to paint a picture of how I found out you existed.
Okay.
So I bought a Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow 2 in 2018. It was my only collector-y fun car for a while. I took it to shows and stuff. And I was in, like, every single Rolls-Royce Facebook group. Horrible, horrible places.
Yeah, seriously.
But, like, occasionally, the picture would come up of Tupac in his 95 Corniche. Mm-hmm. Most typically the one of him pulling off of Bob Hope in Burbank there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, everyone would be like, I don't know who that is, but it's improper to have your arm on the windowsill of the car.
I don't know who that is. Typical Rolls-Royce owner.
Yeah, so okay. I hate the Facebook group. Yeah. Don't ask them a technical question. They're the first, they're like Corvette owners. They'll tell you to sell the car.
Yeah, either look at the owner's manual. Yes.
So I was like, man, everyone always talks about the car Tupac was shot in, but like, where's that car at? So I kind of started my own little very in the background quiet mission. Like, I want to see if I could dig up anything on this. So it's like, I found the auction where they sold the license plates. I had the same, the registration picture that you had in the VinWiki video. I differentiated the 2 instead of the S in the VIN. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that should be an S. It's British.
Yeah.
And I looked up a history report on it, and I had a Google search or a Google alert set up for that VIN. And that's as far as I got until one day, April 2025, I'm scrolling Instagram. I forgot who picked it up. They're like, someone found Tupac's Countach. And I was like, oh, not Countach, Corniche.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it. And then I hit follow on you. So
I appreciate that.
After I got that far, what's after that in the search?
How did I continue the search?
Yeah.
Well, basically, I ran the VIN. Mm-hmm. I did a public records request. I got the owner's name. I went about, you know, it was a trip from Miami. I was driving back up north, and I stopped in South Carolina and knocked on his door, and we made the deal happen, like, immediately. Like, I slept over there, so it really wasn't that difficult to find once you knew to switch the 2 to the S.
Yeah.
This was a car that, like, you know, my family and whatnot had been wanting for a while. I'd looked for like, probably a couple of months, not extensively, but I really started looking for it, like, on and off for a couple months, running what we got and, you know, addresses and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so once, like, I had all that information, it was actually pretty easy to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was funny because I saw in the history report there, I wasn't sure if, because it looked like it was sold because it has on here.
Oh, you have the history
report. I have the bumper report.
Okay.
It looked like it was sold at that, there's a dealership in the Valley that's full of Rolls Royces. So I wasn't sure if when it came up in South Carolina, like, is it in South Carolina or is it someone not wanting to smog it and pay California registration? So it actually was in South Carolina.
It was physically in South Carolina. And the funny thing, if you notice the date on that, the auction for the registration was, 2017.
Right.
At some point. That sale was 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So the car, even though its registration had sold for like a ridiculous amount, the car had been in private hands when that sold, went to a dealer who didn't know, and then sold it to somebody else who also didn't know it was Tupac. Yeah. So three different people just didn't find that auction, I guess. It didn't have the right VIN.
Mm-hmm.
So I get how it's not the most easily connectable. But it had passed through three hands with nobody realizing.
And probably each one of them was one of those people who don't know who Tupac is.
No, they very well know who Tupac is.
Oh, they did?
I mean, the dealer definitely did. The guy who I bought it from did.
But they knew they had the car or?
No.
No.
Okay. I didn't even know when we had bought it if it was really the car. Because I was going based off of like assumptions and whatnot and like matching colors.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I was narrowing it down by colors to see how many other black on tans we could find. To see if there was a possibility that there was like a different one or, you know, maybe it wasn't a typo. Not that a Rolls was ever built in Canada, but, you know, I was exploring all options to make sure, but that really started after I bought the car.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had bought it as a non-driving, it ran, I guess you could call it that. It, like, you would have to, like, run under the hood, flip the starter, and, like, turn off the starter when somebody, yeah, it was, like, horrible. So we bought it as, like, a semi-running, definitely not driving car because the gear shift wouldn't go into drive.
Oh, wow.
The electronic one. But it was an otherwise really good condition. Mm-hmm. And he had, the previous owner told me he had gone through a whole process of getting the back glass for it, which on the final 25 Corniches was glass, not plastic.
Mm-hmm.
25. So good luck finding that glass.
They probably made one spare.
Yeah, it took him like forever and he found it in Australia.
Wow.
And it was like $12,000 or something crazy. Yeah, so he had done that to the car, but then never really touched it after.
Okay.
So it was just kind of in his collection.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of cars?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of there in the background.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because you said on VinWiki you were just looking for a black Corniche because your dad wanted one.
I had suspected that the one that my dad had some history with was the same car because of its geographical location
mm-hmm.
and the fact that how many of them are there. So once I got the VIN and all the history lined up with the dates I remembered, everything. So it was very likely the same car. We still don't know 100% whether it's the right one or not, but it was one that he had history with. And then, you know, that whole story, obviously that intrigued me just seeing mm-hmm. the registration years later. Like, yeah. It's 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit of both that made me want to go look for the car.
Mm-hmm.
But once I saw the registration on that, I was like, this seems doable because I'm sitting there looking up like Tupac Rolls Royce and
yeah.
it's all vintage photos or mm-hmm. like 1995 yeah. photos. No mention, no I have it, no nothing. So I was like, if the registration sold for that, like the car definitely sold for some crazy. No, it was getting serviced at Meineke with like 70,000 miles.
Yeah, it was yeah. completely off the radar.
Yeah, no, like it was getting serviced at chain shops. Yeah.
So did you buy, because I saw this on eBay when I was looking too, and I was like, I had it in my watch list. And did you buy the Nessun license plate frame off eBay for
I
it?
I did not. Oh, no, I didn't even know that was a thing.
And it's disappeared, so someone has it. But yeah, there was like one pair of license plate frames from that dealer on eBay. And they were asked, I don't remember what they were, it was, I want to say to the tune of $400 or $500.
Really?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And they disappeared. So I don't know if someone bought them or they pulled the listing or what.
They're probably still, you could probably still get a set. I personally never really cared to, honestly. Mm-hmm. We bought the Tupac Hummer and mm-hmm. the tailgate of that, like they literally hand painted the word Nessun with the dealership's phone number above and under the word Hummer.
Wow.
So Nessun was a bit like Nessun sold them a lot of cars mm-hmm. apparently through brokers, not maybe directly, but
right.
like, through brokers and whatnot. They leased or bought a lot of cars from Nessun.
Okay, so you said your dad had history with that car. What did or does your dad do?
So my dad's not a car guy. I mean, he went to chiropractic school with this guy. He's a chiropractor now, and he was, you know, before I was born or like when I was a baby, he was traveling a lot more and didn't have kids. So he was out west fairly often. His friend had owned a black on tan Corniche. He loved that car. So it was something I had heard about growing up mm-hmm. always. They had their suspicions. Nobody ever made that connection really. So again, do I know it's the same one that he had some history with? No, but similar enough, and how many of them could there really be?
So what got you into cars then, if your dad wasn't a real big car guy?
He likes cars, but it was really my mom.
Okay.
She's very much a car girl. From a young age, I always loved cars. Like, every time I went to BJ's or Costco, I'd get those, like, 118 mm-hmm. Maisto, whatever. Yeah. It's like, so I just had, and, like, the cars I was into were, like, everyone else my age had like CLK GTRs or like, you know, Murcielago models or whatever. And I literally had like a Saturn L300, GL450, a 2003 Grand Cherokee. Like I liked cars like that. Like, mm-hmm. So I was definitely a weirdo when it came to cars, but I mean, that just snowballed once I grew up.
Okay. So like when did you start like acquiring cars?
I mean, the second I could drive, I got like a somewhat, like it's not an enthusiast car, but I got a somewhat newish Lincoln MKX. So okay. I was like, you know, I always liked nicer cars, but mm-hmm. I would say what got me really into cars was I bought a 1988 Lincoln Town Car.
Nice.
And it was, I didn't know there was supposed to be a difference between D and OD. So like it needed a transmission when I bought it. Little did I know. But I was like 18. I didn't know mm-hmm. anything about cars. But that owning that car really showed me that like classic cars are not only dailyable, but like you can work on them. You can mm-hmm. still get parts if you don't get the wrong one. So that car really kind of set off the whole, like, looking for interesting cars things for myself. That's probably where it started.
And then where did it go from there? Like, when did you, like, start? When did you start acquiring?
Here and there. A couple of years after that. I was probably, like, 20 or 21. And it really, like, I like traveling. I like going on little road trips and whatnot. And, you know, being a car guy, I could always, like, see, like, oh, there's this abandoned. There's this, like, this is sitting at a mechanic shop. Mm-hmm. So I'd leave notes. I would, like, whoever would call me back, if it was a good deal, I'd take the car. It didn't really start getting crazy until I bought a V12 Lawrence, or I call it the trash truck, because it was literally being used as a garbage truck on a Route 66 town in Arizona. And when I was picking that up, I posted a photo of this OBS F-350 I had towing it in the OBS group. And somebody commented, like, you could barely tell what type of car it was on the trailer all the way back. It was like a wide-angle photo. It looked like a little black speck. And he's like, nice C-140. You want, like, several more? I was like, yeah. So tell me what you got. And he sends me photos of a barn in Ohio with, I mean, probably 75 or 80 Mercedes. And a good 50 of them are, like, special. Like, ABC wide bodies, AMG Hammer body kits, things like that. Like, just cool tuner Euros. So I bought all of them. And I probably half the barn the first time. And then I came back the next year and bought the second half of the ones that I didn't really want. But after that happened, I started not being so scared of buying out whole collections. So I just started buying whatever collections came up, pursuing collections. Then I realized, you know, with this car, this Tupac car kind of showed me that I could, it's possible to track a car down. So that was really the catalyst of it, is finding that. And then the next car was Ed's Diablo from FinWiki. And from then on, I mean, it's been like a year and it's just snowballed. Like, in the biggest sense of the word.
So you found that the Tupac car before you found the Victoria's Secret Diablo. Oh, wow.
Correct.
I thought they were the other way around.
I didn't share that I found the Tupac car for a while, mainly because, like, there was just no reason to. Like, it was like, I don't want to post it while it's on my trailer and I'm driving it home. Then we got home. It's like, well, it's not fixed yet. And so it's just like, never had a reason to post. It was a security concern a little bit.
Yeah, that makes,
like,
sense.
Yeah, so, but then when the VinWiki video was, we had, like, an idea of when it was going to drop, I released, you know, the statements that I had actually bought it with the proof and the picture of the reg and all that. And then we did the story on it in December, and that's kind of when I, like, was fully open about it.
Yeah. Because that was my next thing, was what was your first real barn find? So you're finding those Mercedes just traveling around.
First real, I don't even remember, because there were so many that were, like, cool, like El Caminos and, like, things like that, that, like, that's a cool barn find, but it wasn't like a wow, that's a one of none type barn find. I'd say probably the Lorenzer S600, because that one just, that has, like, one of the coolest stories out of any car that I own. And that's, like, I will never sell that car for that. It was, like, literal real life Lightning McQueen. Like, it was in the town that they had based Radiator Springs off of, Seligman, Arizona. So it was and it couldn't have been a more Lightning McQueen story. Like, it was like a $200,000 supercar that got caught doing dirty work in, like, Route 66 town. Like, it was, like, the most matching story. And then the 37 Chrysler that I bought a 37 Chrysler Imperial Coupe convertible rumble seat.
Okay.
I think it's a C14 or C60, C14. And that, like, that was also another thing that kind of was, like, a catalyst to finding the cool cars. Because the guys tell me about it. And, like, I came up on this mechanic shop. I literally was driving by. So I had, like, 100 abandoned classic cars. So I whipped around. There was one guy running all this. He's like, yeah, these are all my projects. Okay. And so I pulled in there. He's telling me about this 37 Chrysler that he has. And that's really special. And I'm like, okay, here goes another guy talking about his 1930 car being special. And then I went home and looked it up. And I was like, wow, he's not lying. Like, the last one sold with, like, huge fanfare at, like, Gooding and Company or, like, something famous like that.
But what makes it special?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you. It's rarity today. I don't know what, I mean, it's the body style, you know, any of those rumble seat convertible two-door, big long hood Packards and whatnot, like, from the 30s, they're special. They're like worth more than the hard tops or the four door convertibles or anything. But this one specifically is a one. It was thought that there was six remaining, and they actually had a meet the year before I bought it of like the six remaining at Pebble Beach. And look at all of them together.
And it was a seventh.
Yeah, it was a seventh that nobody knew about because there's registries on those cars. Mm-hmm. Like they're well documented who owned it, who restored it, who did what on all the other remaining six. This one was literally rotting in a barn since 1952. So it was like before the people who started the registries were even alive. This thing was like rotting.
It was just a used car then.
Exactly. Well, it was. So the funny thing was it was part of a two-car purchase with the Woodstock Hotel. So they had bought a Packard in burgundy and that Chrysler in beige with the burgundy interior. So they were like flip-flop color schemes, but those were the hotel colors.
Got it.
So they never left Woodstock, either of those two cars. And the person that I had bought the 37 from, his mom had actually owned the Packard decades before he came into the 37. So like that's how small of a town it was. It was like everything stayed local.
And do we know where the Packard is now?
No. it's still up there.
Yeah.
According to I think I did ask and he said that it went to a collector who has a lot of like other pre-war cars. So it's not like sitting abandoned like the Chrysler, because the Chrysler went to somebody absolutely insane who just like parked dozens of cars in barns around his property and then traded it to somebody else who then sold it to this guy. So the car hadn't seen the light of day, you know, since 1950 because it was basically crazy car hoarders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you start searching for cars for other people? Was it with Ed Bullion's Diablo?
Yes. I would say that was the one that started it. And, you know, that was another car that people had been looking for, like public pleas on Instagram, VinWiki videos. I mean, news articles like, can you help Ed find this? Like, it had been out there for years begging people to find it. So once I found it, like, relatively quickly, I was like, this might be doable. And then other people had watched when that video came out. Other people had started reaching out to me, like through Ed, emails, just DMs, all that. And he was forwarding them to me and, you know, or like texting him or whatever. So really after the first like VinWiki of finding the Diablo, everyone had just asked me to start helping find their parents' cars and whatnot. And it was such an influx that like I had no idea what I was doing. Like I hadn't found a car for anyone. So like I was pricing it wrong. I was like, for the amount of stress, because if I hate taking people's money and not finding their cars, like I will literally, not always refund depending on how much I did, but like I want to if I don't. Like it's, I don't like not finding people's cars. So I was hesitant to take on a lot of the jobs at first, especially the ones where like, I don't have a VIN. I haven't seen the car since 1970. Can you help me? Like, sure. Like it seems, sounds completely impossible. But then I did like five of those and we found all of them. So then it was another five and all of them. So up until this most recent round, I have 100% success rate on finding the cars, even if we didn't have a VIN, one photo, 1950, like all that. So I was like, nobody else is going to help these people. So like I might as well.
But where do you even start on that with no VIN and just like a yellow photo? Like,
So I'll give a good example. This 1977 Porsche that my client's grandfather had owned, they didn't have a VIN, but we had a color scheme and one photo of the car based off the color scheme. So for a while, I'm like typing in keywords and like trying to actually look on how to find this thing on social media or just like Porsche clubs or anything. And then I start focusing on the color because I asked AI, I was like, what color is this? And it's like between Minerva blue or something else. And the guy, I reach out to my client, he's like, it's Minerva blue. So I start focusing on that color and we get a literal Facebook post of a Minerva blue stripped out. And I click on the guy's name. It corresponds with the story. The guy's like, I sold it to a contractor in Newark, Delaware. I click on this guy's like Bear, Delaware. I was like, how far is that from Newark? It's like a mile away. I click on his profile. He does like roofing. I was like, and he's restoring a Minerva Blue 77 911. I was like, what's your VIN? Like, I hit him up. I was like, can you just tell me your VIN? And he's like, I'm on vacation right now, but I will get it for you. It was a match. So with a lot of old cars like that, you can match it based on their attributes. Now, muscle cars, like, I was thinking this trip, I don't think I'm taking on many more muscle car cases at the moment because those are the hardest ones to find. Especially, like, I was hired on a, like, I forget the actual color. It's like Camry beige GTO. And that car, I don't have that high hopes of. We don't have a VIN. We don't have anything because it's also the worst color for a GTO. It had like hubcaps, like, just like the worst specs. So many things of that car would have been changed. But I'm still trying on it. I'm still doing everything I can. There's ways to get cars that were registered to people if you have, like, you know, DMV records and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I would usually start there. And that's probably the most expensive way to start, but also the most foolproof if it's not like 1970 I own the car. But most of the ones that I found from no VINs were just based off the attributes of the car.
Okay. So you said something at one point to the vein of like, make sure you do X, Y, and Z before you reach out to me. What's a good way for someone who's trying to find that long lost car before they take up some of your time? What's something the regular person could do to try and figure out where their car might be?
Yeah, so it's not even like my time. I mean, of course I care about that, but it's like I don't want to take their money if there's a way easier route for them to go. So there's like, you hire the PIs, put your post out on social media. Like I tell everyone, have you tried Lost Muscle Cars first? You know, like those Facebook groups and whatnot. Or if you're looking for the Porsche, like did you post in the Porsche groups? And once all that's been exhausted, you hired a PI, they came back with nothing, which honestly does not mean that the databases are not useful. It means the PI did not care enough to do anything beyond typing your name. Mm-hmm. So I have it on a shirt too. I have like, you don't need another PI, you need a car guy. So, and that holds very true because you need somebody who's not just going to go like, no result, next. Mm-hmm. You need someone who's going to look at this and go like, put the pieces together. Like, oh, they owned a bunch of muscle cars. They probably had this. Let's call them type thing. So that's, yeah. I forget what the question was, but that's my answer.
Things you can do before reaching
out
to.
Yes, yes. So hire the PI first. Do all your research that you physically can think to do yourself. Walk into a DMV, like with a cake or a cocaine. Be like, can you please run this? Like, try everything because I tend to be a lot more expensive than a regular PI, but it's also for things that like have been out there, public pleas on the internet for 5 years and they came up empty.
So like, what's like the strangest journey you've gone on to find a car?
Strange how? Like, what do you mean strange?
It turned up somewhere you weren't expecting, or you went to a place you never thought you would, or
the VS. The Victoria's Secret Diablo, by far, because that was probably the most discouraged I have ever gotten looking for a car, because in some way or another, you have a lead. We had a little bit of a lead, but when I got to this town, I was like, there's no way it's here. Every local's laughing at me. Like, and this town is rough. I mean, not the roughest in America, but it's rough. Like, you type the name in, and, like, every article is, like, went to jail for meth, like, home invasion, like, double murder, And what actually had, you know, helped me with my recon a little bit on the car was there was like a barbecue place that like just got robbed last week, like still glass on the floor. And it said the owner had been there for like 35, 40 years or something. So I went in there and I was like, sorry to hear about your break-in. And you've been here for a while, right? And he's like, yeah, I sit in this exact spot for like 35 years, 9 to 5 every day. So I was like, and it right by a window on the main street. I was like, have you ever seen a white Lamborghini? And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, a couple more questions. Like, I got on his bad side a little bit. Like, he was like out of patience. He was like, son, I never seen a white Audi in this town. Like, there ain't no nice cars here. So I was like, all right, great. So then I start doing what I normally do, going to bars, things like that. And literally laughing at me. Like, played darts with a couple guys who were cool, but they were like talking to some of the other people in the bar who were like, this guy's dad knows everyone in town. He's like, loaded for Streeter, Illinois. And like, so they'd ask him like, and I literally saw him like, look at me and smirk and just shake his head. that was the response I was getting from everyone. And they're like, son, like nobody knows. I was like, there's not one car collection. He's like, yeah, the guy owns the taco shop has a 55 Ford. I was like, that's not at all what I'm like, I bet he does. That's not at all what I'm looking for. So that was probably, I mean, it was literally the rarest, most expensive one-off Lamborghini from 1998 sold in a catalog or tried to sell in a catalog. And I'm thinking there's no way somebody took the rarest Lamborghini from the 90s. Never insured it, never registered it, never photographed it, never took it to a car show, never talked about it, never posted a photo of it, nothing. And then just put it in this town of all places and never touched it again. That was exactly what happened to that car. So that was a very, very surprising one. Like when I got the call back pacing around in this Airbnb wondering what the hell I'm going to do next, like I was very surprised. The Lawrencer, like I said, definitely a weird situation. I mean, there's been a few cars in weird situations, but the Victoria's Secret was definitely the most unexpected.
And then has there ever been a situation where someone has a car and you knew it absolutely, like, it doesn't exist anymore. It was destroyed something, like, you had to break it to them.
Unfortunately, two. One of them was an 85 Cadillac. I felt really bad. I didn't even take the guy's money on that one. Like, he was like, let me pay your retainer, at least put some effort in. We ran one VIN thing and said junked. So I was like, I'm sorry. Like, Envitas says it's junked, has no new registration. I called the owner. It was out of service. She died. Like, this was like 03 that the car was last seen. Another one was a BMW E30. Four-door, 318, like, just not a saveable spec. And it had 360,000 miles when it was sold or something crazy like that. And the guy, for, like, since the Victoria's Secret thing dropped, he's been asking me, like, please just look for this. And I'm like, it's scrapped. Like, I really don't want to take your money. So finally, like, a week ago, or, like, maybe a month ago, he's like, can you please, like, I'll pay you whatever just to start. I was like, you know, just give me a very small amount, like smaller than what I normally take. And I was like, let me just look into it. But, like, I'm telling you, please don't pay me. It was scrapped. I don't want to break this to you. That was probably the only one that I know for a fact after I've gotten paid was scrapped. And I'm still trying. I'm still trying to get in touch with the owner from 06. Maybe it was sold off as a race car or something. I don't know. But it's not still around.
Yeah, because to paint a picture, again, when I was growing up, we had this conversion van that I adored. And in 2006, right, like, it was like maybe a year and a half before I got my driver's license, it developed a misfire, and my grandpa was like, I'm getting rid of this. It was the first time gas got expensive, like $4 in the Midwest was unheard of for gas. No. He went and bought a Nissan Quest, absolute piece of garbage, okay. Traded in the van on it. And then it went to another owner in Chicago, and then it showed up. It was registered until 2008, and then it just falls off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
If it was scrapped, though, wouldn't that show up in the history report, or not necessarily?
Not always. Especially, 08 should. It's new enough to where, like, things were computerized, but not in every state and not every junkyard. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible. Like, this E30 didn't say junked anywhere. But yeah, so, like, you just gotta kind of use your, like, how rough was it when it was sold? Mm-hmm. Those are, like, the questions I ask people. That's, like, one of the star questions I ask people is, if you had to guess when you last saw this car, was it well on its way to being a crusher, or do you think somebody would have saved it, put a little money into it type thing? Because that really is, like, almost every time when they tell you they think it's going to be crushed, it's not still around.
What was your least favorite job you ever went on? Let's say the least favorite one where you did, in fact, find the car.
Did, in fact, find it?
Yes.
Okay, so this was terrible. This was, like, actually, this was this week. So I've been very fortunate when we find cars. Like, everyone's like expecting a knock on the door premium, and I tell people to expect that. You're going to pay more than what it's on Facebook Marketplace comps for. So reached out to me. He was like, he was my age too, and honestly I thought he was a lot older based on his voice. So when I found out he was my age, like, I felt like kind of bad. He had his dad had this Viper, and he was he was, like, big into unions. Like, he had a cell phone company that did all contracts with unions. He had a car dealership called Union Motors, and, like, he only hired people from unions. Like, he was, like, a big patriot.
Yeah.
So he had, no disrespect, the most boomer Viper ever. Like, painted in stars and stripes and everything, and the son really wanted to find it. So I'm like, oh, of course, it's a stars and stripe Viper with chrome rims. Like, how hard could this be? Nothing. I mean, like, it was last seen in that paint job in Detroit in 2010. After that, went cold. And I actually had found the car doing reverse searches. I got a VIN. I got the owner in Kansas City, reached out to him. He never answered my calls. Got the then current owner, because I found it had a Montana tag. Got the then current owner from the Montana LLC. Went through all this BS, and we find the car. It's repainted red back to its factory color. And I called the guy on, and he's like, oh, it's factory paint. I was like, maybe, you know, you never want to pisses people off. So, like, I was like, oh, maybe it was just a wrap, like, knowing full well it was airbrushed. And he's like, oh, well, now they mention it, like, yeah, we changed the pumpkin underneath and there was red overspray on everything. I was like, yeah, cause, never mind, it's not original paint. So I'm like, great, we found it. It had 70,000 miles or like 60,000 miles or something, and most of them were this guy's dad. Like, he'd used it as, like, a daily, like, traveling around and whatnot. So I'm like, look, like, we finally found it. I was like, I spoke to the guy. I was like, can you consider selling it? And he says, yeah, it's one of four Vipers that I have, and it's one of two that I don't care about for anything. He's like, I bought number 62 because I was born in 62. But so I was like, oh, great. It's like, he doesn't care about this Viper. He's like, let me see what I'm into it for. Let me see what I'm going to replace it with, and I'll call you back. And so we're getting really excited. Like, this might happen. This guy might get this car. I went through all this trouble for months. It was one of the cases that I thought was, like, really going to be impossible that I wasn't going to solve. Solved it, and the guy gets back to me, like, a couple days later. We're waiting so anxiously. And he's like, yeah, I think I'm going to replace it with, like, a 2026 Scat Pack RT. I was like, all right, so what do you want for the car? He's like, that. I was like, I hopped on CarGurus. I was like 65, 70 grand. So I get back with my client. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. Like, you really get the shit end of the stick on this one. Like, the guy doesn't want it. Because we're thinking repainted first-gen Viper with 70,000 miles. Like, 30, 40, yeah. 45 would be, like, absolutely astronomical. And, like, 50 is, like, almost a no from him. So I said to the guy, I was like, I don't really have any Dodge dealer connects, but, like, how much would you want cash? He's like, 75.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, dude, like, I got back with my client. I was like, it might be cheaper to get him a Scat. So, yeah, we're in the middle of, like, trying to solve that right now, but that was the most disappointing I had ever had and probably the most unrealistic ask ever. So then I had, like, a stroke of genius. I was like, wait, what if we just go on Facebook and get one of the numerous ones with half the mileage and original paint for 35 grand and we give it to him and we tell him, let's get you a better car because you literally said, I'm not attached to this thing one bit. I don't care about it. I haven't driven it in years. I was like, let's just get you a better example and we'll do an even trade. And he left me on red.
Oh.
So he's like, I don't know if he's like trying to milk the situation, but like I've never had that happen this hard.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So I also wanted to get into a little bit about more about what you collect. I saw your video on the ABC exclusive Mercedes. Did they ever make it back to back east?
Two of them did.
Two you had in the video, yeah. So the other two are still in
one of them,
in the planes.
One of them I was told runs and drives no problem. You put a brand new tire on it. I get there and it literally has no tires on the other three and one brand new tire on the front. And the steering is like Bluetooth. I was like, what do you mean this runs and drives? So I was that car that I think that VinWiki story actually dropped on it. It was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
About this guy kept like trying to cancel after I had paid him in full for the car and was like driving 30 mm-hmm. hours. Like every 4 hours he would try to cancel. I'm like, buddy, I'm literally in Maryland, right? Like stop. So I get the car and I get there and there's no way to move this thing like efficiently. Like we had a flatbed, mm-hmm. but no transporter wants to pick this thing up because the steering box is rusted off. Like there's no, can't even fix it. So yeah, that car is still sitting in Missouri. I have another one sitting in Missouri as well, just because it's very close to that one. Mm-hmm. Bought those the same weekend, actually, two ABC wide body, white Mercedes four doors. And I was just like, when I come back for that one, like I'll do a package transport on the other one. It's like $60 a month to keep it there, which mm-hmm. like I couldn't store a
yeah.
spare wheel for that in Long Island. So
yeah, here you're talking over $1,000-$2,000 a month for car storage.
Yeah, so some of the cars I don't mind leaving places if like they can't physically get any worse, like yeah. they need paint, rust, every like just sit there, like you're fine. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in terms of what I collect, it's not even all the wide bodies. I actually don't really love the way they look. I just love the rarity and the, you know, they all have some crazy 80s mods done to them and some crazy stories. But I love the tuner Euros, definitely. Like, those are my thing. Mm-hmm. I love 80s, 90s tuner Euros.
So what's your dailies right now? Like, what are you driving interesting?
So I put 120,000 miles a year on my cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through dailies like every 4 or 5 months or so. So right now, not for long, I have a 2008 S550 4MATIC.
Okay.
Which actually in its of itself, I didn't buy that car thinking it had a story. I got it from my PI who got it from one of his friends in New York. And it turns out it was owned by Guy Gentile, who if you look him up is like on the run for defrauding people for like 1.9 million. Like he had a thing for W221s because there's an article about how he didn't give his like Russian sugar baby girlfriend 50 grand to start a business. And she drove his other 221 into his pool. And like, so this guy is like on some crazy run from the law or something. And so I got the S-Class really cheap. And his mom told me that the owner died.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she didn't want to tell me that it was this guy. But so that's my current daily is a massive crypto scammer or whatever is S550.
And do you still have the 140 you drove from Florida to get those other cars?
Yes, that's a keeper car. Because like just when I bought it in Florida, you know, you're test driving it. So like I'm trying my hardest to make this thing do something weird. Trying to like see if the transmission clunks, if I like get on and off and on and off. Nothing. Like it wasn't a single stray vibration. It was the best example of a W140 I have ever seen. So I kept it because it was dead reliable, treated me right, and it looked mint. Yeah, so I still have that one. That's definitely a keeper 140. That and my 600 are probably the two 140s that I would keep.
I briefly, how long did I have? 2 years. I had a 600 W140.
Okay.
And I was so dumb to buy this thing. So
yeah, tell me about it. It
I found it on, I was still looking at Craigslist at the time. I've since moved on to, I almost exclusively
Everyone
buy through
did.
Auctions now, but I found it on Craigslist. It was over there in Culver City. Yeah, W140 S600. The mileage, where was it sitting at? I think it was at like 164. Reasonable.
Yeah.
He wanted $6,000 for it.
Okay.
So I went and looked at it. Little rough around the edges, but it ran and drove. I was able to drive it around the neighborhood. He replaced the engine wiring harness that was brand new.
Yeah.
There was a bunch. It came with a bunch of spare parts. So
nice.
I was making a deal with him on it. It was running a little warm, and there was still a little bit of frayed wiring in another part of the harness. So I got him down to $4,500.
Okay, it's not terrible. So, I bought a. I don't like telling people about this one because it was like such an "I told you so" to everyone else who told me not to buy it. But I bought a freshly repainted. Like the guy had put like $15,000 into this car, 1997 S600, and I mean this thing was mint. Like it looked like, especially with the rims I'd gotten for it, and it was like a little lowered. It looked like one of those like $35,000-$40,000 Instagram builds, but it had 362,000 miles, and the guy only wanted like $4,000 for it.
Yeah.
So I bought it. I towed it home from Ohio. Same guy, same Ohio guy. Slowly buy cars still from him. And it lasted, it was really reliable for like 2 weeks, and then it just pissed out all the transmission fluid like in New Jersey. And that was the first car out of all these miles, all like 40-year-old cars being driven across the country. That was the first time I've ever had a car break down on me. So I was like, how dare you? What is this? Like, you only have 360K and are a 20-year-old S600. Like, how dare you break down? I was like offended. Like, so I, yeah, that, other than that, like, I haven't bought another 600 for that reason.
I'm honestly kind of scared of Mercedes. So what happened after this, I talked him down to 4,500. So up to this point, like when I first went to meet him, he sends me an address in Culver City. I get there. I don't see the car, but he's like, oh, I'm on my way back from Whole Foods. I'll be there in 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, great. I hang out, wait for him. He pulls up, just a regular looking dude. And that's when like I look at the car and I make this deal. I go back to pick it up. I got the cash. Turns out he's living in an RV up the block.
Oh, God.
And he comes out just completely ragged.
Okay. Well like, maintained.
Typical guy who looks like he lives under a bridge.
There you go. Those are the best S600s.
But I still went through with it, and I paid for it, and I bought it, and I registered it in my name. Like I said, it ran a little warm for a bit, but I was able to drive it around. I drove it to work a few times. The suspension clunked. That's to be expected. Yeah. The vacuum pump under the back seat didn't work, so the soft close stuff didn't work. And I'm going down this huge rabbit hole of like trying to sort it out and get it going. So I put a new water pump on it, new radiator, new parts for the air conditioner because it was leaking. It was leaking refrigerant.
Oh yeah!
And apparently on that car, there's a bunch of switches that mean the cooling fan won't turn on if there's no refrigerant in it.
Yeah.
So I put a ton of money into it, and then it behaved for a while.
Really?
The needle stuck right in the center, and then one day I go to Del Taco, and they're taking their time, and then all of a sudden I see the needle is drifting and drifting and drifting up to the end of up to 120. So I get home, everything's fine. I can never start it again.
Really?
It won't start. It's like it won't even crank.
Well, is that temperature protection thing? Because I had that happen once.
Might have been, but I pull out the dipstick and I'm like, why is my oil level so high?
Oh no.
Why don't I have any coolant? All the coolant went into the oil pan.
From what?
I don't know. The head gasket might have blown. The case might have cracked. I never got that far. I bought a head gasket kit from England, like a Felpro one. It was like the only place I could get it from. I still have the kit. I don't have the car.
Okay, yes.
And I started tearing it apart, and every fastener on that engine was stripping because they were all like Allen screws.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
So I was like drilling out every screw, and yeah. I get to the point where I tear it down and I was like, what am I doing with this? I sold it for $2,000 for parts. A guy in Glendale bought it because he wanted the interior from it. But
yeah.
After that, I was like, I'm so done with German cars.
Well, your experience was a 140 from a trailer. Like, yeah, like the 140s are the scariest platform. Like, mm-hmm. no matter how much that S420 has treated me really well, mm-hmm. I will never be confident driving it.
Mm-hmm.
Every single mile is like, is that going to break now? Like, so I get that. Like, try a W124 and get back to me. Like, it's like a breath of fresh air, honestly. Nice. Yeah.
That and the other horror story I had. Same thing. Buy a cheap German car. Where'd all the coolant go? I wanted a Porsche really bad. This is so stupid. I wanted a Porsche really bad. I bought from Mannheim.
Okay.
Like the cheapest 996 cab in the world.
Why? Who told you to do that?
Me being selfish, being like, I want a Porsche, but I don't want a Boxster. I want a 911. So I bought it as a non-runner. It comes home. It's got no coolant in it.
Okay.
Okay. Top off the reservoir. I hear pattering, and it's coming out the exhaust.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So that was another car. It sat in front of my house for about 9 months, and I sent it back to the auction. I took a huge loss on it.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, the C-140 project right now is definitely a lot more than I anticipated. But, I mean, of course, considering what it was used for in its history.
Mm-hmm.
So that car, I don't know if you want to hear the full story of that car. It's probably one of the more interesting stories. So you ever seen the movie Casino?
No, I actually have not.
Really? All right. Well, yeah. So when she's getting in the Mercedes to like run with all her money, that's basically what happened in this car. So this woman was trying to escape an abusive relationship in Vegas. So she got in this Lawrencer and put her kids in it, tried to make it to family in Texas. And she stops on this little Route 66 town, gets gas, didn't realize or something that the husband was following her with a friend. They got out, like, beat the crap out of her. She went to the hospital. He went, like, took the kids and went on the run. And, like, it was a whole big thing. And the town was so small that the police impound was the back of the gas station. So they literally just brought it to the back of the gas station and it sat there for, like, 8 years. And then this very nice family in Seligman had bought it to try to kind of motivate their Cheeto-covered son to, like, get a job and a driver's license and, like, mm-hmm. fix it up and use it to go to work. And I'm like, you know how much that wiring car is going? Like, more than the whole town.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that obviously got nowhere. And they then started using it as its only purpose of taking them and their neighbors and whatever trash to the municipal dump. So to not ruin their 06 CRV. So this car literally became the town garbage truck. And it was, as far as I know, from what I've read, it's a 1 of 6, and Michael Jordan had one of the other ones, mm-hmm. like also 1996. So that one, that's definitely a crazy story. And as you can imagine, that car needed everything. And the best part was on the title, it says like 196,833 on the mileage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, how many miles does this thing have? It was about that, maybe a couple more dump miles or whatever on it. So. Okay, so I go and I start the thing up, like, after I paid for it, and it says 096. I was like, huh. So it's, like, almost exactly the same. And I get out, and I look at the tires, and they're from 2015, which is the year that the car was parked, but they're, like, brand new. It's like, nobody put 100,000 miles on those tires. It's like, this is just a typo. Like, this car actually has 96,000,
oh, wow.
Not 196,000. So I got really lucky. And, like, I checked the Carfax, and, like, unless it did 100,000 miles in 2 years sitting in an impound lot, then it's valid miles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are you a wrencher or?
When I have to be, like not by choice.
So you're not at home fixing all these things.
If I can, I do. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to. I had like two dailies that like blew up minorly, and it's just so much easier for me to just go get another one at this point.
Oh, that's true. So.
And I'm never home. So like I'd just throw the car out at this point if it's not a special car. Yeah, but I do fix what I can where I can. Like I've had my – like we dropped a screwdriver down the turbo of my Bentley in a driveway in New Jersey trying to fix a coil pack. So like I've had like the intake manifold apart like by myself in the Bentley in this random driveway. I do things like that if I have to, but certainly not by choice.
Okay, so that was – is that the Nicki Minaj Bentley we're talking about?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah.
So what was the story on that one? Because wasn't that an earlier find too? And or
that wasn't a find. That one, like, that was literally, I know it looks now.
You just
now
bought
that,
a Bentley?
I know how it looks now that I literally chase celebrity cars. Mm-hmm. But that one, I just wanted a GT because they're somewhat reliable for, you know, an exotic. They're all-wheel drive. I didn't want a Ghost because it was rear-wheel drive. And so I was looking at ones for, like, at the time, there was like the newest body style too. So I was looking at ones that were on like the lower end of the price for like 44,000, 40,000 miles, something like that. And I was literally getting ready to fly. I had exhausted every single option in the country. I was so tired of looking for a car. So I was getting ready to buy a black on black one at the Lamborghini Dallas dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scrolling past this one. It didn't make any sense. I had seen this listing. It was on Car Gurus and I think also Craigslist. And it said 3,000 miles, was grandpa beige, but had these like massive wrapper rims. And it was also the same price as all the ones with 40,000 miles on. So I was like, that's a scam. Like this, because you think about it, like that's either the original owner, it doesn't have two owners and that's 3,000 miles on it, you know? So like, did the second owner buy it for like a week, put some big rims on it and just never drive? Like, no, the original owner did that. So like, nothing made sense on it. I scrolled past it. I was like, before I book this ticket, let me just like call this guy. And he tells me, he's like, it has celebrity provenance, but I'm not going to tell you it over the phone. If you're interested, come down and look at it. So I come down and look at it, and he tells me it's Nicki Minaj's pink Bentley. And I was like, where's the pink? He's like, we took the wrap off. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this guy's just like talking out of his ass here.
Yeah.
So I go around and I start looking at the jams, and there's still, to this day, there's still a lot of little pink scraps that they missed. And I hop online, I start looking at all the individual, like all the photos of this car, the paparazzi photos and everything. And I see like one thing that really did it was like it has crazy Mulliner options, this car. So it has leather full stitched, like diamond stitched paddle shifters from the factory. And I saw that in the photos with like every other detail matching, same spec, same stitching, same everything. I was like, oh, somebody stole the sunglass case out of it. But I was like, this might be actually the same car. So I didn't have any reason to doubt him. And then he hands me the title and says, Onika Tanya Mirage or whatever, like her legal name.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. I guess it's Nicki Minaj. Yeah. So that was purely an accidental find. The Celebrity Car Museum in Branson, Missouri. Love that family. Awesome guys. He had told me that fact. He's like, dude, you just sold it to me when it had 3,000 miles. Like I would have paid you a significant profit. Yeah, but I want to drive it.
Yeah.
So I ruined it. In like the first year, I put 42,000 miles on it.
Oh, wow.
Or it had 42 on the odometer, so I put like 39 on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say daily, I mean like I drove it in Pennsylvania's worst snowstorm. It was like 4.5 feet in the town that we were in. Terrible. Every type of weather you could imagine. I mean, every single time I needed to go to the grocery store, 7-Eleven, like I spilled a gallon of milk in it. Like it was the most daily Bentley that you could like imagine. And honestly, it was dead reliable. So I was like literally a Honda Accord. Like I had like one sensor go bad in that time. And then it got hit by a drunk driver.
Oh.
So I elected, because I just loved the car. And it's kind of a cool story. I love cars with stories. I elected to have it fixed, mainly because like, what am I going to do? Go replace it. At the time, it was still, you know, an expensive car. I was like, I'm going to replace it with one with like more miles I don't know the history of. So I just fix it. And I had it fix it like the best shop. But I haven't really touched it since then. That was during COVID, and I stubbornly really wanted a carbon fiber body kit on it. So it took like 2 years to get that, and then we got that, and they were like, hey, we can't get a trunk for it. So it took like 3 years to get the car back. And now we're dealing with some interesting things where I ran my Carfax, and I've been wondering why my insurance is like double what it should be. I ran my Carfax, and there's like a whole second accident claim that happened on the car that's like fraudulent.
Mm.
while it was parked in a body shop for a year. So there's now two accidents on my Carfax, and I'm paying insurance as if they relisted my first one getting hit by a drunk driver as my fault. So now I have two at-fault accidents on a Bentley, or so they think, when I've never even had one. So the car's just like kind of sitting right now because it's boxed in. I'm not home. I got my dream set of rims for it, like ADV1 510 track spec. And they were like brand new, like 24 grand. I found them on Facebook Marketplace in Marietta, Florida. And they didn't know it said ADV1. They thought it was an I. So they listed them as ADV rims. And then on the title, it like autocorrected to Advil. So they're like 22-inch Advil rims. Like, come take them, $1,300. I was like, okay. So I went, I got those rims. I got the carbon fiber body kit. Now, like, I keep saying I'm going to get to it, and I promise I will, like, this year, but, like, it, things have just, the last year has been so busy that I haven't had a chance. I want to wrap it Tiffany blue satin chrome. Like, I already, I was told he bought the material, now he's not answering me. Great. So, yeah, that's kind of where that car's at right now.
Nice. So, I hate this question when people ask it to me, but I'm going to ask it to you. How many cars do you have?
I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I... Like, personal keepers?
Yeah, personal keepers.
I have, like, 6 forever cars.
Okay.
And then I have, like, probably another 10 that I really like, but, like, will always rotate out into different stuff.
Okay, so we're in the same boat. I call it my sweet 16.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so I, but, yeah, personal keepers probably 4.
Okay.
Or 6, yeah.
It's not as bad as I thought.
No, I'm not, like, trying to have a collection yet. Like, I'm too busy. I neglect these things. Mm-hmm. But, like, there are just some. Like, the Bentley and the Town Car, you will never... If you see me selling them, I was kidnapped and killed. Like, it's I will never sell those.
Yeah. And that's still the first Town Car you had.
Correct, yeah.
Oh, wow,
not
still
bought
have
a
it.
Second Town Car. Yeah, I still have it. It's still in, like, relatively good condition, like, completely rust-free still. So, the vinyl top is, like, shredded to hell now just from age. So... That's kind of mothballed that car a little just because I don't love looking at it with the vinyl top. But we're building on a warehouse right now. We have been for like a few months. So now that I have like literal, you know, like a massive car storage facility, we're going to be putting some money into these cars. Like I didn't want to do the top and have it just sit outside again because none of my cars, Bentley included, have ever known what a garage or like a private parking spot is.
Yeah.
So they're all like street parked, like outside. So I've been meaning for a while to get a garage, and then finally this was just like the best option.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I have this, everything's going to slowly start getting worked on. Like my 300 CE with the AMG Hammer body is in right now, getting all like mechanical refresh. And it's going to go to paint and whatnot. Well, it doesn't need paint. It just needs like a really good correction because it's black.
Have you ever gone international to find something?
Yes. Well, I've bought cars internationally, of course. There's a few. So the next place is probably, I don't know if you've ever heard of the NCP Pakistan cars on customs paid. So they get them in. They literally like, you should look up the videos. They're really interesting. They like cannonball these cars through like the Afghani desert to get them into Pakistan without like actually, you know, paying the,
right.
For proper import. So when they're there, apparently nobody cares. Like the police aren't going to take the car or anything. Mm-hmm. But you can't do anything with it after unless you smuggle it back through the Afghani desert. And Afghanistan being your safe spot is like insane. But that is one thing. Like I was offered a couple cars out there where I'm not quite sure how this is going to work. But like they offered me a twin turbo MK4 Supra for like 30 grand.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah. So it's like.
It's tempting at that point.
They take the bumpers, the front and rear bumpers off and just like. Cannonballing through the desert so that I don't get ruined. But yeah, a lot of times you'll lose a couple cars. You just have to like accept it. Like they get stuck and there's nothing you can do. Nobody's rescuing you. So you just got to go. But I'm also trying to find the Supra that was part of the Tupac fleet. So it was, I forget his name. It was like something McDonald or something Anton or something. But oh no, it was Buntry. Buntry Supra. He had a black Supra, which if you look, it was in all the background shots or like a lot of background shots of Tupac convoys and whatnot. And it was actually in the police report as taking bullet damage from chasing the people who killed him, which doesn't make any sense how a 94 Cadillac couldn't outrun a Supra, but okay. So that car later got, it fell off the radar, got painted fuchsia pink with purple seats, but they still kept the cream and black like door panels. They looked horrible. And it had like a massive Speed Hunters banner on it, and it was bought and sent over to the UAE. So that's one that I'm like ready to hop on a plane if we can actually find it. Some Brunei cars. I bought a few Brunei cars, including one that's I'm really excited about. It's still like a year out because it just takes forever to get cars from them, but it was a I forget the year, like a 90-something Sprinter full AMG build. Like for, No, like they didn't make this for the public. I mean, AMG like jousting side skirts and everything, like AMG front bumper, AMG monoblocks. And they couldn't put a V8 in the chassis, so they put the C32 supercharged. Every seat in the back is a Recaro. So like all the like captain's chairs and whatnot in the back seat are like the party Sprinter. Recaro seats, Recaro's up front, like crazy custom wood grain. So yeah, a lot of the Brunei cars, and you know, there's obviously an F1 engine over there, which we'll talk about at a later date, but I'm trying to get for Ed to, or at least if the owner's down, to do something with it. Yeah, those are just some of the international deals I've done.
Well, like, what's even the process for the Brunei cars? Because, like, I hear two different things, because it's, like, it's super-duper secretive, but they do get out, like...
They do get out. Yeah. Recently, obviously, a lot more has been leaving. I can't speak for everyone's process, but my process was wire tens of thousands of dollars to Djibouti, Africa, and just pray. And, you know, that's what I did. Like, the first time we did it, like, I make this deal, like, where are the cars? Or like, you know, they're over here, and how am I going to get them? I'm like, all right, now this is a wire instruction. I look, and it's, like, literally Djibouti. Like, I didn't know it was a real country. That sounds like a dad joke. Like, just wire 40 grand to Djibouti. Like, so that's what we did. And by some miracle, the cars arrived. Now, it's become somewhat known that the Brunei cars are a little bit rougher than than anticipated for the mileage, as well as, you know, just how they're kind of represented sometimes. But that's not the fault of the family or anything. It's like people selling them, flipping them, the citizens of the country. But in terms of the process, that's like, it's how the Sprinter went. Like, I sent the guy money and sent him a WhatsApp. He didn't reply for like 4 days. I was like, please tell me you got this. I got it. That was the last correspondence I got. I don't have a title. I don't even know what year the van is, to be honest with you. So, but we're got, I got a VIN, so I could look it up. But once you pay, it takes, or at least for all the prior ones, they kind of take forever getting the export paperwork. So there's like deregistration paperwork. So on Brunei's system, it gets deregistered from the person and put into your name for export, as far as I know. And so that takes a while, and then getting them over here takes a while. So like it, the first cars took like over a year, like 14 months. Second ones were a little faster. The Sprinter has yet to be seen. I'm fine being patient on it, but yeah, it's quite a process to get them out of the country.
So is these are just, is it cars still owned by the family, or is it cars that left the family and now they're owned by private individuals there?
Both. Cause a lot of the cars had left, from what I understand, they're like private, like in-country auctions for like the citizens or whatever. So a lot of them buy them and they're like, oh, Brunei car, which it's true. Like the S-classes that I bought, the address on the registration was they're like Imam Del whatever. And like I translated, it's like Castle of the King. It's like the address on the registration, which is kind of cool. But yeah, so like in that sense, like a lot of these cool cars obviously started out as Brunei Royal Family cars. But like I'm not wiring Prince Jeffrey himself. So like, yeah, it's you go through people and you just kind of got to hope that they'll show up.
Is there anything in that collection you want to get for yourself, like specifically?
Well, for myself, no, because I actually, I mean, yes, but I drive way too much to use any of the cars. I was offered a, my biggest regret, and I'm sure the guy who offered it to me is looking at this smiling. He offered me a four-door Bentley Continental R, I think. It was like the one that's a two-door with the big blinkers underneath the headlights. And it's a two-door for like everyone else in the world, but this guy had it made into a four-door and paid all the R&D instead of just buying a four-door Bentley. So they offered me this car, and like, it looked like a proper left outside for 30 years Bentley. From like the suspension was slammed, like Carolina squatted. None of the wood grain was intact. Like it was really, really rough. And I'm looking at this thing like, how do we even get parts for this? Like he offered it to me for a price where I was like, it's not really, like, the coupes are kind of going for that in really good shape. I know this is a one-off model. I was like, I think I'm going to pass on this. I don't want it. That car, like, went to the Netherlands or something and sold for 10x what he offered it to me for with that, like, with the sagging suspension and crack wood. Like, I was looking at this like, damn, it's going to need a lot of money. Didn't put a dime into it, brought it overseas and flipped it.
Wow.
So I try not to say no if they offer me a cool car now, but I mean, I would love the Dominator SUV, the Bentley SUV.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
The crazier tuner cars, like, they had an SGS Gullwing. They have, you know, some Koenigs that, like, nobody knows Koenig made. Things like that, like, the really special, like, wow cars, those are the ones I want from the collection, obviously. So I thought I would go the Ferrari approach and, like, buy some regular C-140s and that they'd like me, but they don't. So I'm still getting offered some of the, like, lower-end stuff right now, but I'm fine with that. Because the lower-end stuff is still awesome.
Yeah.
It's like the crappiest car I got from them was, like, a 936-mile C-140 S600.
The one that stood out to me as a GM guy was the Pininfarina Suburban. It's so weird and stupid.
Nobody's seen that thing, though. Like, really? Out of all the there may be modern photos, but I haven't seen any. And I did ask my guy about it, and he's like, what the hell is that? I was like, all right. But yeah, I haven't seen any modern photos of that thing. Or, like, now that you've seen, like, the whole collection leaked and whatnot, it hasn't popped up.
Ways people can get in contact with you.
I have an Instagram that's probably my primary, just because it acts as, like, also a resume when you go on there, kind of. I have all my contact information up there. You can email me at barnfindking@gmail.com or say my phone number. Or I don't really care if it's 516-508-0045 is probably the most direct way to get me. So you can contact me there. I'm currently setting up a website right now for, like, when I feel like taking on new cases, because the next year or so right now, I plan on just going crazy, hitting off these lists of, like, all the projects I'm doing in LA. I'm doing some things with, like, the dub cars, some of the Midnight Club cars, like, things like that. So we're kind of putting together a little, like, secretive project right now of, like, the cars everyone knows but has no idea of where they are. So I'm focusing on that as well as trying to get all of the abandoned Lamborghini Diablos and Countaches that exist in America. I've been putting together a list of the VINs of abandoned ones. And
how many is that about?
Hundreds.
Really?
No, there's hundreds. And it's an accurate list. It's like, I was putting this together all based on a whim, not exactly going to say how, like, I'll tell you in private, but I was putting together this list through just, like, speculation of, like, these cars are probably abandoned. And after getting owner contact information and whatnot and contacting them, it's, like, 90% accurate. Like, 9 out of 10 people who answer the phone are like, yeah, I've had this car sitting in my garage for 20 years. I haven't touched it. So those are the ones I'm kind of, like, checking off the boxes now, because I love the, like, the worst examples of the nicest cars. Yeah, that's what I'm working towards now. So when I'm kind of not sure when the website will go up, but it'll be at some point. I'll have barnfindking.com, both the domains. So we'll see when that goes live. That's another. I'm gonna have a contact form with, like, all the FAQs and, like, the what you should do before you contact me and waste your money type thing. So yeah, that's gonna be the best way.
Great. So thank you for coming down here and spending time with me. And
absolutely, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Tim. Tim Fabrizio, reach out to him if you can't find that one special car. Or reach out to me, Justin at drivelineshow.com, Instagram and TikTok at drivelineshow, and voicemail is always picking up at 833-3DL-SHOW. See you next week. Bye-bye now.